Maybe it was this clip from The Simpsons that sent so many of you to your computers after last week's show.
So you like donuts, eh?
Uh-huh.
Well, have all the donuts in the world!
We promised you an interview on our blog with Paul Mullins, the author of the book Glazed America, A History of the Donut. He's actually on our website live as we speak. Go to npr.org/Sunday Soapbox, not only to tell us your favorite donut memories, but maybe to throw a question at our donut expert. And judging from this past week's response on our website, many of you have been caught in a sticky situation. We asked several of you to record your memories. Here's what Susan Sullivan of Newton, Massachusetts had to say.
My donut memory is from college. My friend Mitty would come to my room at around 3 a.m. to sing, Susan, donuts. I would emerge and we would eat. Once, however, she called, Susan, poetry. And we read from the complete work of E.E. Cummings that she had stolen from a library. I gained 10 pounds and remained an English major. I sometimes teach Cummings. Mitty is still my friend, but the donuts, not so much.
And here's Lloyd Allen of Atlanta, Georgia.
When our daughter Claire was 4, she became angry at my wife and me. She packed a little bag and came to tell us she was running away. When I asked her where she was going, she said she was going to Ron and Kathy's, our next-door neighbors, because they have donuts for breakfast every Saturday morning.
We also want to check in with a very special person who is celebrating his 92nd birthday today, NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore. And Dan, I couldn't end the show without saying happy birthday to you.
Leanne, I wouldn't end my show if I didn't hear from you.
I want to ask you, though, do you have a donut story?
I don't have a donut story as such, but this being my birthday, can I substitute a bagel story?
Well, it's a pastry with a hole in it, sure.
Some 60 years ago, I used to travel a lot on assignment or for lectures and was checking at hotels and come down for breakfast and say, do you have a bagel? And frequently the waiter would say, what's that? And that went on for some time, 60 years ago. But then over a period of time, 50 and 40 years ago, I found something changing. I found you can go to any hotel now and go into the breakfast room and say, do you have a bagel? And they say, well, of course. How do you want it, toasted or not toasted? And I think the arrival of the bagel in places which didn't used to know about bagels is a part of the celebration of my birthday.
Well, happy birthday, NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore.
Leanne, I thank you.
And to bring our story full circle, here's NPR Scott Simon with his 5-year-old daughter Elise for a little donut story of their own.
Baby, you can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what you used to call a donut?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, what happens when we go to, when we walk into a place like Citarella's? What do you like to say?
Candy bagel.
Did you say I want a candy bagel?
Yes. Yeah.
I tell you what, we're going to get some candy bagels tomorrow, okay?
Yay.
To send us your donut or candy bagel story, or to post your questions to Paul Mullins, author of the book Glazed America, A History of the Donut, go to our website, npr.org/soapbox. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.
My friend, the little sparrow, flew close enough to see. Written on the rainbow is this philosophy. When you walk the streets, you'll have no cares. If you walk the lines and not the squares, as you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole. Watch the donut, not the hole.
Commentator and cookbook author Nancy Bagot is perfectly willing to brave the mosquito hordes as long as she gets to that pot of melted gold at the end of her Labor Day weekend picnic.
My family's gathering for a cookout. I'm all set. My sticks are whittled and a sack of marshmallows, grams, and chocolate bars waits by the door. I wouldn't want to miss this last chance of the season for the sanctioned overindulgence called eating s'mores. I'm already mentally fast-forwarding through the steak grilling and corn roasting and chit-chatting, and I'm on to the main event. Never mind that we cook over a backyard grill instead of a crackling campfire. No matter that lawn chairs and landscaping and gas lamps stand in for a deep, still forest, or that the odor of charcoal supplants the purifying scent of smoldering logs and tall pines. In my mind's eye, my grandchildren merge with the kids I recall from my camp counseling days, eager but callow and in dire need of improved marshmallow roasting technique. If you don't get them hot, they won't melt the chocolate and glue the grams together, I want to warn them. But I respect that it's an art requiring practice, that youngsters need to find their own personal s'more style. Maybe my grandkids will mimic my daughter-in-law, whose technique is sensible and refined, but a touch persnickety. She calculates the proper distance for holding her white puffs from the heat, then slowly, methodically rotates them until golden brown. My son's approach is shocking and utterly incomprehensible to his mother. He pushes the marshmallows and graham crackers aside and simply eats the chocolate bar. This peculiar predilection, which I hope his children never witness, must be inherited from the other side of the family. Other than upgrading to premium chocolate and sometimes to homemade marshmallows, my own s'mores method hasn't changed much in decades. The puffy confections stay by the glowing embers until they sizzle and singe and suddenly ignite. I let the fireballs char on the outside until mostly carbonized, then, poof, I blow out the flames. Yes, this occasionally results in something resembling ashes and lumps of coal, but when I'm on, it yields an amazing amalgam of fragrant, partly molten, partly crispy, chewy, burnt sugar goo that fully melts the chocolate and plays beautifully off the graham cracker crunch. No wonder these goodies are called s'mores. With the plaintive sound of the folk tune Kumbaya suddenly playing in my head, I mourn the fast-approaching end of grilling season and contemplate the cold, s'moresless months ahead. Perhaps I can put my cookbook author skills to work and create some clever indoor s'mores recipes to carry me through. How about a batch of oven-baked cinnamon graham and cranberry-studded s'mores bars for Thanksgiving? Or maybe a chocolate peppermint s'mores pie topped with broiled marshmallows and red and green sprinkles for Christmas? I'm sure my son will pronounce them ghastly, but they will drive my grandchildren absolutely wild.
Commentator Nancy Bagot actually makes her marshmallows from scratch. Imagine that. You can find a recipe on our website, npr.org. And the song of Hiawatha that we spoke of just a few minutes ago inspired our parting words tonight. They come from another poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The songbirds leave us at summer's close. Only the empty nests are left behind. And pipings of the quail among the sheaves. That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jackie Leiden.